Welcome back to the Renaissance, my little fleshlight. How are you?
Doing okay. That will give me nightmares tonight, but I've come accustomed to that, so that'll be fine. How are you doing?
Ray and I just had a huge conversation before.
Huge.
About fleshlights.
Massive. It was a moist conversation.
I don't know if you know this, but you can't get the... I thought I'd be able to take an imprint of Chrissy.
A 3D.
And send it to them. Yeah, and so...
3D printer.
Taylor just bought it. Taylor just bought a 3D printer.
We're going to be
so rich. That
wouldn't
be weird.
We're going to be so rich. Chrissy, we need you to model this. Just hold very still for a couple hours. We're going to be so fucking rich. Anyway, please,
With my camera, I think I can take like 3D, photos and then give it to my 20-year-old son and say, could you print this on your printer? Don't ask. I know.
Don't ask, don't tell. Just hit start and walk away. Walk away. I'll pick it up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is awesome.
Oh, let's get back to Leonardo da Vinci.
Please.
We had Curtis Wong on last episode.
Yes.
Lovely guy.
Yes.
What a sweetheart.
Yes.
Done just a million... fabulous things. We have to get him back on. I could talk to him for hours about Criterion Collection films and LDV and the stuff that he's seen. He told me stories off air that he didn't tell on air too, because they're sensitive, I gather. But he's done an amazing amount of stuff, and lovely of him to come on and share some of it with us.
Cool.
But let's get back to LDV. So, as we know, he went to Milan around about 1480. He's sort of 30, a little bit over 30, 31, 32. He's a complete failure, really, in Florence.
Right, but not in his heart.
No.
Maybe he was.
He's a complete failure. Nobody values him. You and I know how that feels. He's a genius that nobody values.
Podcaster.
Like, we get it.
Right.
We get it.
Right. Yeah.
So he thinks he's going to be better off in Milan. But as far as we can tell, for the first few years in Milan, doesn't get any better. He gets no commissions for anything. Painting, military equipment, architecture, nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, I have no idea how he survived during this period. I have no idea how he fed himself, whether he's getting money from his dad or his family. Obviously, the family had some money.
Right, right.
And this becomes an issue later in life. But he's got lots of siblings that are legitimate siblings and all this kind of stuff. So it's not like he's the only son and he's getting a stipend from daddy. He might be getting something, but he's probably not living high on the hog, and he's got to spend a lot of money on, for practicing stuff. He's got to be tools, but what he spent most of his time doing, as far as we know, because he didn't keep a diary as such, but what he did do is keep notebooks.
Yes,
and it was sort of and it was this period where the notebooks really became a big thing. We'll get into that a little bit later on, but. Before we talk about the notebooks in more detail, I want to talk about one of the things that he designed, because I had never heard of this before.
Right.
In this early period in Milan, was his design for the perfect city, a utopian city. Let's talk about that, Papa Bear. What was he? Yeah, can you what?
Real quick question. Was the notebooks that he kept, was that like an early version of the, what's it called, OnlyFans? Was he making money off monthly subscriptions? Because remember, he was good looking when he was young, and he's only 31. He's probably still got some hotness around the corners. We don't have to dwell into that, but obviously he had money, because I imagine it's expensive to live in Milan. But you're right. I mean, the place is not exactly, because it is a large city, there's a lot of trash, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of bad smells, not unlike some porn sites I go to on the website. And, maybe there's a chance that he can clean it up, but you're right. He's walking around, thinking things up. No one's asking him to. And he's writing all these thoughts down, and he stumbles upon something, the utopian city that a lot of Renaissance thinkers actually dream about a lot in whatever city that they're in.
Yeah. So, and I guess the fascinating thing about this is he's a problem solver.
Yes.
He's like, okay, I'm here now. Congratulations, I'm here.
Lucky you. Right?
What's the big problem? What do you need done? He's like the goodies. We do anything, right, anywhere, anytime. He's like, what's going on? No one outside of Australia and the United Kingdom, maybe Canada, will get that.
Right.
Goodies reference, doesn't matter. Your fault. You were born in the wrong place. Right. And you didn't grow up in the 70s in the right place.
Exactly.
He's like, well, the plague. We get the plague all across Italy. Yeah, plague is bad. How do we stop the plague? What causes the plague? Ooh. One of the things that he... Oh, yes, the fake Cherokee up the back.
More prayer. More intense prayer.
More giving. It's the obvious things. More prayer.
More donations.
More oppressing of the Jews.
Oh, there we go.
You know, you've got to oppress the... You know, more oppressing of the Jews. That's... The obvious things. We're already doing step all of one, that.
Right, check.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Step one, pray to God. Step two, kill all the Jews. If the plague continues, come back and see me in the morning.
Right.
And
dig up the Jews and kill them again. Go ahead.
He started thinking, maybe we need to redesign cities. Maybe we need to rethink what a city should look like. Because what we're doing isn't working. We're just cramming people in together. Cramming, cramming it, sticking it in there, jamming it in hard. And everything is filthy and dirty. Yes. There's horses pooping in the streets. There's people pooping in the streets, quite frankly.
Is that wrong?
There's garbage just being tipped everywhere. Right. It's disgusting. There's sewage. It's disgusting. Obviously, they didn't have a germ theory of disease then. There wasn't a germ theory of disease until the early 20th century.
Right.
But he put two and two together. He goes, there's something going on here.
Yeah.
And he had been studying nature and how nature keeps itself clean.
Right.
And he looked at how what animals do, how they, you know, they shit and move. Shit, move along. Take a crap,
right?
Move on, move on down the road.
Material right there, and that's when they're not licking themselves clean. So obviously, there's something to be learned from these animals.
He tried that for a long time. He would have paid other people to lick him clean, but he didn't have the money. Poor,
right?
Yeah, he didn't have the money. That's like
charity licking. Is there a charity licking shop right now? Fuck. Oh. All right, do it myself.
He tried your motto of Neil suck crack. But unfortunately, when you spend all the money you get from kneeling and sucking on crack,
it's not the best business model. I'm still fine tuning it. Anyway, so healthy people, healthy city, right?
Should be kneel, suck, invest 10% of what you earn.
Right. Pay yourself first, then buy crack.
QAV fund,
exactly.
Then buy crack with what's left.
Exactly.
And. shit, what was I talking
healthy
about?
Healthy people, healthy city,
Yeah, and he also was studying the circulation system and the digestive system and realized that the body just keeps things moving all the time and it has different ways of keeping it clean, keep it moving, keep it clean. So his idea was to design a new city where it was actually 10, the population would be split between 10 smaller towns.
Right.
Located close to each other along the river. And it's like suburbs, I guess, breaking the city up into 10 suburbs or what do you call them in
subdivisions, neighborhoods, areas, boroughs, ghettos?
Boroughs. I was thinking New York. Boroughs.
Right.
Boroughs, subdivisions, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he would basically just, he had these ideas that there would be lots of water flowing through these things.
Right.
And Milan was very good at water. It had a river, it had mountain streams and melting snows, and they were quite good at, you know, the Romans knew what the fuck they were doing with all this kind of stuff.
Right.
They'd been working on this for years. They probably lost a lot of the knowledge that they had back in, I mean, if you brought Agrippa in, it would have been done in a day. Agrippa would have Agrippa'd the fuck out of this shit. But his vision was, this is a quote from his notebooks, to disperse Milan's great congregation of people, which are packed like goats, one behind the other.
Yeah.
So filling every place with fetid smells and sowing seeds of pestilence and death.
For semen. But no, I take your point. Yeah. It's too much. Too many people.
Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. His idea was to combine the streets and canals into a unified circulation system.
Yeah.
But the brilliant idea here too is not only to split them up,
right,
but to have two levels. It's levels, Jerry. Levels. It's all levels, Jerry. Levels.
Yeah, yeah. But that's smart.
So the way I understand it is the top level, right, what was above ground, would be designed for beauty and aesthetics.
You're welcome.
Big, wide roads, boulevards, nice houses, mm-hmm, lots of distance between the houses.
Yeah.
Lots of greenery, lots of parks and gardens and trees and sculptures, right, and fountains, beauty, and
yeah,
churches, and all the beautiful stuff is what would you see up top.
COVID measures.
Down below,
right,
on the second level, right, I'm not sure if this is necessarily underground, but like it's just built lower.
Right.
You would have the sewage, you would have the canals, mm-hmm, that are moving sewage and water, and hopefully the two are kept slightly separate.
Please, God.
You would have all of the commerce. You'd have the workshops, the trades guilds, mm-hmm, down there. So all of the dust and the dirt, the horses.
Right.
All of the horses would go down there. All of the sanitation stuff would go down there.
Podcasters.
So all of... Yeah, exactly.
Right. Sorry.
He's probably thinking, you know, places for him to get blowjobs from young boys, right, down there too. Obviously, hey, that's what he's thinking. But
yeah,
with the goats, like you put all the dirty, smelly stuff,
right,
underneath, and then you put all the night where people are going to live up above.
Yeah,
and that's where this thing. That's where this. This thing comes from. You can't see this if you're not watching the video. Yeah, the dancing thing, raise the roof. Yeah, that was Leonardo da Vinci when he was trying to explain this to people. Yeah,
and then he would write it down. Write it down some more. Yeah, but what I enjoyed was, because even though the horses are going to be down on the lower level because they're used for commerce, they're used for trade, they smell. They can smell, and when they go ploppity plop, it's massive. Even though they're on the lower level, he knows how important the horses are to everybody in the city for many different reasons. So even the buildings that they're going to be in are going to be well ventilated. There's going to be holes in the walls, or there's going to be holes in the ceiling. So, like, and you were saying this a second ago, let the bad stuff out and bring good stuff in. The same thing with the air, you know, the same thing with the water, the same thing with the air. Circulation of the air, don't let any rooms be stifling, because he suspected he's not a doctor. He doesn't have a PhD and whatever the fuck causes these things. But the point is, he was using his observational skills to figure this out. You know, there's filth, and it's probably connected to the disease. Same thing with the air. Let me make sure all the buildings are well ventilated, and that should help take care of this stuff. So again, not a doctor, but figuring it out through observation and his keen intellect.
And he basically invented social distancing, yes, in the process.
Yes, he's the original Fauci, I think is what you're going for. Exactly.
Yeah.
Leonardo Fauci.
Yeah. So another great idea that he had, and he went into a lot of detail in his notebooks about this,
right,
is the way to keep the boulevards up the top clean is the boulevards, the roads, would be gently sloped.
Mm-hmm.
So the water would run down and then it would go through the middle. There'd be slits,
right,
along the roads in the middle for the water to drain down below, right, into...
Something that would catch it and whisk it away. Sorry, yeah. So he literally, I mean, no one's paying him, no one's asking him, but he goes into great detail in his books, figuring out all the small details, because the plague is kind of a big deal, and if he can come up with something that can be preventative measures, it could change the face of the world.
Yeah, so he wrote in his notebooks, each road must be 20 braccia wide and have 1/2 braccia slope from the sides towards the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle, let there be at every braccio, I should say this, let me start that again and I'll do it in Italian, braccia. Each road must be 20 braccia wide, mm-hmm, and have 1/2 braccio slope from the sides towards the middle. And in the middle, let there be at every braccio an opening, one braccio long and one finger wide, where the rainwater may run off into hollows.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Sanitation.
Do you remember how big a braccio is?
I know that like 20 braccia is 45 feet or 13 meters. So what's 1/20th of 45? Is that just over a foot?
Yeah, I think a braccio was an arm, right?
Right.
Braccio in Italian is arm. Yeah. So it was like one arm's length, which should be longer than a foot. It's more like a meter.
Right.
Let me see.
Well,
there's my meter long ruler.
Right. Yeah.
Right up to there. It's about a meter long.
Yeah.
Roughly a meter.
Something like that. Yeah. So, yeah. Again, but like you were saying a minute ago, the houses were going
to
be.
I have that here to measure my penis, by the way.
I understand. And I'm glad it's glass so you can see through it. Anyway, the houses on the upper level were to be stately. They were to be as tall as the streets were wide. They were to be beautiful, imposing, and all the unmentionable stuff would be down on the lower level. So this was actually going to be very 10 very beautiful subsections of what collectively would be Milan, but they would be spread out, and hopefully there would be safety numbers, because if one portion gets contaminated, you shut it down, no one in, no one out, and the other 9/10 of Milan will hopefully be safe from the plague. I mean, it's a brilliant idea, and this is how many, 500 years ago or whatever.
He also thought about where men could urinate.
Yes,
because important. It is very important, particularly as you get to our age.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, particularly for some reason at 4:30 in the morning.
Was that you? Oh my God! I heard somebody in the hallway. Yeah, no, 4:30 in the morning. I'm up. Clear. I'm going to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and then I can't get back to sleep. No, I have to sit there and read for an hour at least. The corner, he says, the corners of square ones are always fouled. He was talking about staircases.
Right.
So he designed all of the stairs that lead from the lower section to the upper section would be spirals, partly because he just likes spirals.
Sure, who doesn't?
But partly to stop men from urinating in the corners of stairs.
Right.
He said the corners of square ones are always fouled. Men are always peeing in the corners. So if it's a spiral, you don't know what to do.
Yeah,
corner. You could just pull your dick out and pee everywhere. But
you're
come on,
tacky.
Well, we're not animals.
Exactly.
Yes, we pee in corners of stairwells, but we're not. You've had sex in a stairwell. I've had sex in a stairwell.
I actually
at least two occasions.
Oh God,
three occasions.
Anyway,
I think, yeah.
That was
anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll compare
good times,
those
good
later.
Times.
Good times.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it might have been with you on one of them.
Oh, anyway, shit. Yeah.
Yeah,
oh
yeah.
Anyway.
He says at the first vault, there must be a door entering into public privies.
Right.
And then he said the seat of the latrine should be able to swivel like the turnstile in a convent and return to its initial position by the use of a counterweight.
Okay.
Did not like men leaving the seat of the toilet up.
Oh, he was. No.
And they didn't have, obviously, you couldn't press a button and flush it.
Right.
So stuff would just sit there.
Yeah.
I imagine he'd had some sort of water contraption system that would flush it away.
Take it away.
And you can't trust men to put the lid down,
no.
So he had a counterweight designed to automatically pull the lid back when you walked away. Yeah. The ceiling should have many holes in it so that one can breathe again. So, of course, like with everything else that he designed, no one took this seriously. No one designed cities this way.
Right.
And as I've mentioned briefly before, and we'll get into that in more detail in future shows, not long after this, Milan gets invaded and Ludovico has to go and Leonardo has to go.
Right.
And so, you know, if he'd been there longer, things would have been different. But no one took this. I mean, it's not like his notebooks disappeared. I mean, his notebooks obviously survived.
Good point.
And probably plenty more that haven't survived to this day, would have been around. Somebody could have gone, fuck, that's brilliant, let's do that. You think about,
right?
I don't know, all the plagues and the disease and the filth that humans lived with up until modern 20th century sanitation came about.
Yeah.
500 years of filth and disgusting
name
shit.
Of my album. 500 years of filth. Go ahead.
Should be the name of all of our podcasts, basically. We should. It's 2,000 years of filth. Right.
But you make a good point. If I'm a rich person or if I am the leader of a city and the plague comes along and I survive and practically all of my family is wiped out, it's like, you know what? Fuck it. It's time for somebody to do something. Clearly what we're doing, we're killing the Jews left and right. It's not working. I'm praying.
Still not working.
Still not working. I'm squeezing money out of everybody to go to the church. It's still not working. And I, you know, Leonardo is famous at this point. His notebooks are famous. Hell, he's famous because of his notebooks. You would think that somebody would have picked this up and said, we have got nothing to lose. Let's try it maybe on a small level somewhere, but let's fucking try something because we're losing a third of our city every time one of these plagues comes around.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Just imagine, like, okay, so I get there's a problem. Like, Florence is a very old city, as we discussed, right. Been around since Augustus's times.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah, but you could go, okay, well, you know, we can keep the city, but we're going to move the majority of the population right. Just down the Arno a little
go
bit.
Down a little bit, yeah.
And, you know, it might take us 10 years, 20 years to build all of this new stuff and gradually move people over there. And then you can still come into the city
for work,
to go to church yeah. and that kind of stuff. But,
hookers.
You know...
Yeah.
Well, no, the hookers are going to be underground with the tradesmen the and the
gotcha.
Guilds and all that kind of
and
stuff.
The podcasters.
Yeah.
I got you. Yeah.
And, of course, your country and my country hadn't even been settled by Europeans at that stage.
Right.
It was going to happen not long after this, 1492, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
in your case. But... Right. You know, if we had all of our cities had been built
spacious
according to the Da Vinci plan,
right.
The Da Vinci code, building code, the Da Vinci building code. Oh, that's the title for this episode. Da Vinci building code.
Oh, good one.
It's either that or 500 years of film.
Save that for the album cover. Or the coffee yeah. mug, who knows? But anyway, yeah, it could be standard. It could be standard.
Oh, imagine what could have been different.
And,
yeah.
and then with something like the Spanish flu in 1918 and then COVID now,
yeah.
we're already halfway yeah. there. We're already halfway
yeah.
to
yeah.
isolation.
Yeah.
Fucking Leonardo. Anyway.
Yeah. But the thing that, apart from the brilliance of this, the thing that struck me mostly about this was just the way his mind works. Okay,
yes.
What's the problem?
Yeah.
Disease. What can I do?
Exactly.
Not like that's not my job. I'm not the Duke. You know,
he didn't write
I'm,
it.
I'm just a,
right.
I'm a painter.
Yeah.
No, he's like, okay, I'm the smartest fucking man around. He's like the Elon Musk
right.
of his day. He's like, right,
nobody
apart from
me.
The billionaire bit, but
exactly.
You know, he's like, okay, I'm the smartest guy around.
Yeah.
What needs to be fixed? I'm
yeah,
your guy.
Exactly.
Any problem, bring it to me. I'll solve it for you.
If Leo can't do it, no one can. So Leo did it, and he wrote it in his books, and he wrote in great detail. And I think in some form or fashion, you can check me on this, Cam, but wasn't it at least some of these ideas presented to Ludovico, who gave them a pass, but I'm sure he had to be made aware of them by Leonardo, because there were, what, three plagues within a certain number of years that wiped out a third of the city, so it would have been a big deal to bring to the head boss.
Well, I think he developed these ideas early in his time in Milan,
right.
before he was really on Ludovico's...
radar.
You know, staff.
Right,
yeah.
Gotcha.
He probably, you know, later on when he was like one of the top guys in the court,
yeah.
the Milanese court, he probably would have over you know,
boss.
A pipe one night, you know, hey, you know, while he's...
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever. But he would have gone, hey, by the way, I got this great idea. I don't know. If you want to see and read about his designs for this... Good luck, because I couldn't fucking find them. Apparently, it's in the Paris manuscripts, part of it, and part of it's in the Codex Atlanticus.
But not in the Leicester.
But,
yeah.
Well, the Codex Atlanticus, not in the Leicester, but the Codex Atlanticus is like 1,200 pages.
Good point.
It is all online, as are the Paris manuscripts. I spent a ton of time yesterday scrolling through them, trying to find this, and it's very hard because,
it's not organized.
It's not organized, and they haven't done it like Curtis did the Lester, where they're not translated
right. And
explained to you. So there's just a bunch of backwards writing in Italian, and lots of scribbledy drawingy things.
I
gave up in the end, but...
And will that explain...
If anyone knows where that is, find it and send it to me.
Right, because you think if it was translated or explained better, someone at least would have sat down and taken some clay or whatever and made a freaking model just to get a visual representation. But yeah, it sounds like it's still buried in his notebook, written backwards in Italian, so good luck with that.
Yeah. I mean, people know where it is because people talk about it in the books, but no one gave me any pictures in the books. Maybe he just wrote about it and didn't draw any pictures, and so I was scrolling looking for pictures and couldn't find it. I don't know.
Yeah. So earlier Cam was talking about Milan, or at least Leonardo, was trying to take advantage of the fact that Milan, for a very long time, had gotten good at using the canals, the melted snows, to have canals in the cities, either for transportation, moving goods, bringing water in, or like we were talking about, trying to get rid of some of the sewage. And Leo was asked to look at the system when it comes to opening the locks and the waterways into, out of, and throughout Milan. And the overall system was called the Navegli. And it was the system of the interconnected canals, in and around the city. So what it is, and they've been here since the Middle Ages, so this is a big deal. So Leonardo starts walking around with his notebook tied to his belt, not unlike Batman with the utility belt, and he's making notes. And he sees what the problem is. And so he comes up with something called the miter lock. We'll go into that in a second. But just know that the miter lock is still used in Panama and the Suez canals today. That's how brilliant his solution was to the problem. So when Leonardo's walking around, when there's a canal and they're all over the place in the city, the way that they would stop the water was called a portcullis lock, like you would picture in a castle. The door just comes straight down, and it's at a 90 degree with the water. And so what it is when the water hits the door, that's just a flat surface, it puts a lot of pressure on it. Sometimes these portcullis locks would break, they would leak, and so then they would try to make them heavier or thicker or make them out of a harder substance. Well, what happens is when you want water or something to go through, you have to have a pull in a lever, and you have to pull on a rope to raise the portcullis so the water can go under. But the bigger and thicker you make them, the heavier they are. So you have to get more men, you have to get animals. And so it's time consuming and it's expensive and it's a little dangerous. So what he does is he comes up with this idea to take advantage of the water pressure. Instead of having the water pressure slam against in a flat surface and bust up the doors, why not use the water pressure as your friend? Let the water pressure solve the very problem that it's causing. So what he does is he comes up with the miter lock. Now, the word miter has three different meanings, but the one here is...
How do you spell miter in this sense?
M-I-T-E-R.
Right.
So I hope I'm saying it right. I think it's miter. But it's a joint made between two pieces of wood or other material at an angle of 90 degrees, such that the line of junction bisects this angle. So we all think of this as common knowledge today, but you'll see a doorway is at an angle. And what it is the door opens towards the rushing water, right? So the water's coming at your door, and the harder the water hits your door that's already closed, the pressure on the water is actually closing the door even tighter. So it's actually helping you seal it even more tight. And it takes a lot less strength or energy, whatever the proper term is, to open the door this way, to open itself up to the water versus pulling something, lifting it completely out of the water. And he developed three of these, and there's still one in Milan today called the Incoronata lock that you can still see there today. So I would love to go to Milan and see this one. We can call it the Canal of Love tour, or going into the Love Canal, going deep into the Love Canal tour, whatever, but we'll come up with something. But out of the three main ones that he helped, one is still there today, and that would be cool. So that was actually something that he comes up with. It's utterly brilliant, and yet it's simple. A lot of things that Leonardo, problems that he solves, are brilliant but simply solved. And it spreads worldwide, and it's still being used today. So again, that ingenious brain of his walks around, sees what the problem is, sees part of the problem as part of the solution, writes it all down, gives it to Ludovico, and it is incorporated. I don't know how quickly it happened, but it is incorporated into the canal system in Milan, making the city life that much easier. It was utterly, and you can see a bunch of videos on YouTube. It's really cool.
I did, however, find his drawing of the city on two levels. I did find it.
Oh, cool.
It's in Paris Manuscript B.
Right.
And, it's basically two levels. Yeah, it's just like buildings are one level and then the things are raised up and then there are buildings above it. So,
right.
And the canals are running at the bottom level and there's other workshops and that kind of stuff. But then there's and like tradesmen's entrances and that kind of stuff. But then up the top, two-level houses. Imagine two-level houses, but like the boulevards on the same level as the ground floor of the second level of the house, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Or building. Yeah. I'll drop a link in the show notes if people want to see that. But yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
Cool.
So, thank you for explaining the locks. That's cool. So let's talk about the notebooks again a little bit in general. So he seems to have started at least keeping them on a regular methodical basis once he got to Milan, right. Early 1480s.
Right.
And he kept it up for the rest of his life. Now, they were kind of a mess, a little bit like his brain.
Right.
Some of them were just loose sheets, sort of the size of an old tabloid newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
Big sheets. Some of them were little books.
Wow.
Little books bound in leather or vellum, the size of, a paperback or maybe even smaller. He carried them around to make field notes.
Mm.
Do you keep a notebook, Ray?
I wouldn't say keep. No, I wouldn't say that. I don't.
It's one thing I've tried to do for decades.
Right.
I'm not very good at it, but you know, I used to use Moleskinas. So I used those for many, many years. Right. I've got a ton of those lying around with scribblings and thoughts and ideas and grandiose schemes written in them, chess openings, observations.
Right.
They're mostly just, Ray is so stupid. Oh, my God.
I can't wait to scan those
after you're dead,
after you have your prostate removed. I can't wait.
It's not going to kill me. Just won't let me fuck.
Right.
As I said to my mate the other day, I'd rather die of prostate cancer, like, honestly. These days I keep them all digital, right? But part of it for me is because my memory is so shit.
Right.
I just have to write everything down constantly because I won't remember anything 5 minutes later.
Right.
I have to just write everything down.
Yeah.
And I think he did the same sort of thing, but he also worked out ideas. He kept one on his belt like a complete nerd, like people who used to carry their mobile phone or their Walkman.
Fanny pack.
On their belt.
Right.
He had like a little clip on. Yeah, fanny pack. Yeah. Chrissy's been trying to tell me for the last couple of years that they're back in style and it's trendy. I'm like, I don't care. It still looks stupid. I don't care what any fashion guru tells me.
Yeah.
They still look stupid.
Everything. I will not wear a fanny pack.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. He wrote, as you go about town, constantly observe, note, and consider the circumstances and behavior of men as they talk and quarrel or laugh or come to blows.
Mm, observe life.
He was constantly just observing everything that was going on, people, buildings, nature, you name it. He was just a student of everything.
Sponge.
A little bit obsessive compulsive,
right.
I think.
Yes.
According to the poet Giovanni Battista Giraldi, whose father knew Leonardo, when Leonardo wished to paint a figure, he first considered what social standing and emotion it was to represent, whether noble or plebeian, joyful or severe, troubled or serene, old or young, irate or quiet, good or evil. And when he had made up his mind, he went to places where he knew that people of that kind assembled and observed their faces, their manners, dresses, and gestures. And when he found what fitted his purpose, he noted it in a little book which he was always carrying in his belt.
Wow. Social scientist. to a degree.
What Giraldi didn't say is then he would start the painting and then just go, nah, I'm not feeling it. Yeah,
or I'll finish it in 20 years. Probably. Yeah. Maybe. Probably not. No. Yeah. But still, that's cool. I mean, he treated human subjects and emotions like he treated the buildings, like he treated plants and animals. He would constantly look at these things, observe them, and if it was worth it to him, and it sounds like a lot of it was, he would make notes of it for later. Who knows? Even he didn't know how he was going to use it later, but it didn't matter. It was recorded down because he found it fascinating.
Yeah. Just his abilities of observation and his general idea that he could understand the world by observing it, paying close attention,
yes,
and it would play out in his art, in his engineering, in his architecture, which he didn't get to do much of, but if he did, that's how he was going to do it, just by study, observation, paying attention. Fascinating. And everything went into these notebooks, ideas for paintings, for engineering, for costumes, for the court, for stages and scenery, for court plays, witty lines, to-do lists,
right,
expense records, sketches of people who he found interesting, anything and everything. And then later on, obviously, his serious scientific research too on birds in flight or the movement of water in a stream or horses, how they move, mechanics, geology. There's only one thing missing in his notebooks, Ray. Yeah. What is that?
His inner thoughts, something to give us a clue about what the fuck was what was going on in his head. He was pretty much, to me, like an alien from another planet walking around observing everything and everyone. This is where you insert an anal probe joke. But no, he was literally like someone from another planet, you know, just taking in everything that he saw and experienced.
I was too busy thinking, well, maybe he didn't have any inner thoughts. Maybe he was like you.
Right.
He was just,
when I have moving around. My first inner thought, I will let you know. Okay. No. Was he afraid of his own emotion? I mean, let's just do this for a second. Was that not what the books were for? Was he not too keen on doing any kind of self-analysis? Was he afraid or disgusted or whatever, ashamed of? I mean, I wonder why he didn't even, I feel good today or I feel bad. Nothing. It was all something or someone else. That's what's in the books. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, well, possibly those things could explain it. The other thing is, you know, 7,200 pages of his notebook survive today.
True.
But it's estimated that represents only one quarter of what he wrote.
Right. So the Dear Diary might have just been lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I cried on the toilet today. Right.
Deliberately disappeared.
Good point.
Either because it was thought to be boring, or maybe it was all just about him sucking little boys' dicks, and they were like, oh, we can't
let that out.
Maybe it's in a private collection. Maybe the Pope's got it. It's in Vatican.
And he's enjoying the hell out of it.
He's loving it.
Or could you say, if I die, burn all these books, or the equivalent of deleting my search history? Thank you.
Yeah. or maybe he just didn't think it was interesting or important. Like he's studying the world, not himself.
Right. Good point.
But you would think a guy that's this observant of everything else would also be observing his own moods and emotions
changes
and thoughts.
Exactly.
I mean, he painted himself.
Right.
Drew himself. I mean, like he sketched himself on at least one or two occasions. Did some self-portraits. So I don't know. It's
the
strange.
The mystery continues.
Yeah. But he didn't come up with the idea of keeping a notebook. It was actually quite a popular idea already in Italy at the time. They were typically called a zibaldone.
Nice.
Zibaldone, which translates as a heap of things or a miscellaneous group of things, a miscellany. In Italian.
Gotcha.
The best known of these, apart from Leonardo's, of course, is the Zibaldone di Pensieri by Giacomo Leopardi. usually just called the Zibaldoni Pensieri's thinking. So it's a heap of things I've been thinking about.
Right.
Heap of thoughts by Giacomo. It was published posthumously in 7 volumes in 1898. But it really popularized, in the 19th century, this idea of carrying a notebook. So by the end of the 19th century, pretty much every serious literary figure traveled around with a notebook and a pen for Zibaldoning, as it was called.
Right.
How many, Ralph Waldo, yeah.
How many volumes is yours up to? I'm just curious, so I can set some money aside to buy them all.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, my paper ones are a dozen of those, but my digital ones,
right.
20,000, 30,000 notes.
Cannot
yeah.
wait. Can't wait.
Most of them are about you, but...
That's why I can't wait.
Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau collaborated on one.
Right.
Oscar Wilde kept one. Lewis Carroll kept one. H.P. Lovecraft kept one. Nice. You know, anyone and everyone kept notebooks right. to just put down their thoughts, their observations.
Yeah.
It's often called a commonplace book too. And it's kind of been a big thing in sort of nerd circles too for the last 20 or 25 years or whatever, like with the rise of the Moleskinas and all of that kind of stuff. Nice paper, nice pen, sit down.
Right, take it seriously.
I do it sometimes with my Apple Pencil and Apple Notes on my iPad. I'll sit there, particularly if I'm traveling and something like that. I'll just use it to jot down what I'm thinking about, observations, experience. And it's nice to go back and reread those years later and see where you were at.
Right.
You know, I go back 3 or 4 years. It's like this year, you know, our podcasts are really just going to blow up and take off. I can feel it. And I go back a year before that. This is the year. We're going to be more famous than Dan Carlin.
I've already got my Jaguar picked out. Can't wait.
Yeah, the year before that, this is the year. Yeah. It's really going to, I can feel it. We're really getting good at this.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was somewhere around year 6 or 7 when you went, hooked up with a new podcaster. I expect, his name is Ray, seems like a really nice guy. I expect big things. And then not. But anyway, it's the journey that counts, not the destination. Yeah. Right, Cheryl? You got a thumbs up from Cheryl. Anyway.
And, of course, LDV came from a long line of notaries who
good point.
Were good at keeping records, all that kind of stuff. But the fact that a quarter of his stuff survived doesn't sound like a lot until Walter Isaacson points out in his Da Vinci bio that's a higher percentage than what he and Steve Jobs were able to recover of Steve's own emails and digital documents from the early 1990s.
Put everything in trash. Okay, that's amazing. That is an amazing statistic.
Probably like all of my stuff, it's sitting on some sort of a floppy disk drive or a zip drive.
Right.
I've got hundreds of floppy disks with emails and backups and stuff from the 90s.
Right. Right.
That, look, I could probably get access to if I wanted to go to the effort, but fuck.
Well,
who has the time and gives enough shit?
If you do need copies of all of them, I'm quite sure the CIA has a copy of them as well. So
the NSA.
NSA has too. So you know where to go now. Yeah.
But it is amazing that these have survived. It's disappointing that we don't have all of his stuff.
Yes.
But honestly, how many people have read through the 72 pages that survive, right? So,
good point. Not too many.
One of the other challenging things with his notebooks, too, is that he very rarely puts dates on his notes.
Oh, God.
So we don't really know what order they were created in, and he would go back and work on stuff constantly. Because paper was expensive,
right?
He would use every spare scrap or corner of every page to write stuff down. So there's a jumble of ideas on every page, and the pages were probably already a bit of a mess. But then, as I mentioned in an earlier episode, after he died, the sculptor Pompeo Leone, who was born in 1533, along with some other collectors, disassembled the notebooks as Leonardo had them,
right,
reorganized them into try and make them in some sort of order before they sold them. So the major collections, the major notebooks around the world now, there's a number of them, but the biggest is the Codex Atlanticus I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. It's in Milan's Biblioteca Ambrosiana.
Nice.
It consists of 2,238 pages.
Damn. Right.
Assembled by Leone from different notebooks that Leonardo used from the 1480s to 1518. The Codex Arundel, which is in the British Library, contains 570 pages from the same time span, was assembled by an unknown collector in the 17th century.
Mm.
And according to, hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but according to Curtis Wong,
right,
who has seen the Codex Arundel in the British Library with his own eyes, they gave him a look at it because right, it's kept in a vault. Each page is stamped with the seal of Her Royal Highness. This is mine. She did them all herself too. This is mine. 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 Yeah, pretty fucking appalling too, right?
570 times. And don't forget that Leonardo's famous saying was, I don't have a square to spare. That's why he would always use up every part of every page and go back years later and fill something in, not unlike his artwork. So that's where Seinfeld got it from.
In contrast, Bill Gates's manuscript, the Codex Leicester, right, is only 72 pages long.
Mm.
Mostly about geology and water studies.
Sexy.
And Leonardo composed them around 1508 to 1510 in one sort of hit.
Right.
So they weren't cut up and moved around. It's one sort of continual notebook of thoughts.
Mm. Gotcha.
Bill Gates bought that in the 90s, as we discussed with Curtis Wong.
Right.
There are now 25 collections of his manuscripts, codices and manuscripts, in Italy, France, England, Spain, and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Scholars like Carlo Pedretti, who Curtis knows, mentioned on our interview,
right,
have tried to determine the order and the dates of a lot of these.
Yeah.
But it's tricky,
yeah,
because, as I said before, he would go back and, like his paintings, he would continue working on ideas. He'd go back to old things. He'd scribble in the corners.
Crazy.
So you end up with a jumble of random ideas all jammed together, a bit like our podcasts, just a bunch of random thoughts and jokes and
held together
dick drawings.
By semen and dick jokes and Cheryl.
Stuffed together into one pretty package.
Yes, not, he's not wrong. He's not wrong.
But it's, you know, that's the sign of a curious mind, mm-hmm, at work. Mm-hmm. He thought about everything, and ideas overlapped in his brain and therefore in his notebooks. Didn't have to make sense to anybody else because he wasn't writing them down for publication.
Exactly.
They were for him.
It was the journey.
A bit like our podcast.
Exactly, it's a journey.
We don't do this. Yeah, we don't do this for anyone else. We do this for ourselves.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure there's no
for
one
our
out
own.
There. Pretty sure.
No,
you, me, and Cheryl.
I'm pretty sure no one else exists.
Right.
It's just you, me, and Cheryl.
We're all in a simulation anyway, so it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
Well, that's all I've got for this episode. My little Zibaldoni. Zibaldoni. My little Zibaldoni. My little notebook.
Zibadabadabadoo. All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to cram in?
Let me see here. I guess next time we can talk about the Virgin on the Rocks, or did we already talk about that? The two copies, and the London and Louvre copies. Did we already talk about that?
The Virgin on the Rocks.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
It's a drink and also a painting that he did, but I'm sure that'll come up in the future. So, no.
Right. Okay.
We're good.
All right. Well, have fun, folks. See you next time.